Good evening, everybody. Thank you for joining us for the Monday, September 13th, 2021 work session. Go ahead and get started here. I'll read our vision statement. We envision a distinctive community that prospers while and by protecting its natural resources, with a sustainable economy and infrastructure that assures public health and safety while promoting personal development and initiative, and where all members take social responsibility and actively participate in decision-making affecting growth, development, regulation, and enforcement, and in which people retain a closeness with and caring for each other individually and collectively while working together to accomplish community goals and preserve community traditions. First on our agenda is a presentation by Brianna Walker and some of her associates for the Salmon Beyond Borders and the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission presentation. And I'll go ahead and scroll down for that. And Brianna, if you are on the call, you can go ahead and take over when you're ready. Thanks.
Good evening. This is Brianna Walker. I apologize. I lost some of that audio. I heard, I think the mayor say, go ahead and take over, and I see our letter up. So I just wanted to check before I launch into a presentation. Was that directed towards me?
Yes. Thank you very much. Go ahead.
Is it okay if I share my screen this evening?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Just a moment here. I'm going to get my screen ready. Okay, so it's telling me that I am not able as a participant to share my screen.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and stop sharing, and I think we have to make you the host. So let me stop sharing mine. And then our clerk can make you the host. Okay, I think you're good now, Brianna.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay. Turn my video on just for a moment to introduce myself. Good evening. Thanks for your patience as I set up the tech stuff. My name is Brianna Walker. I'm the campaign coordinator for Salmon Beyond Borders. And my colleagues at the Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission, whom are co-sponsors of the drafted resolution before you and also helped approve the letter that you have, were unable to attend this evening, but I do have their contact info. So if you have specific questions for them, I'm happy to direct you their way. I'm calling in from Occoquan Klingitani, Juneau, Alaska. And I'd like to tell you just a little bit about Salmon Beyond Borders. Let's see if this will. Now I can't seem to get the slides. There we go. So Salmon Beyond Borders is a campaign, a community-driven campaign, and we work closely with commercial and sport fishermen, community leaders, tourism and recreation business owners, and concerned citizens in collaboration with tribes and First Nations united across the Alaska-British Columbia border to defend and sustain our transboundary rivers, jobs, and our shared salmon way of life. So if you've heard of Salmon Beyond Borders before, or SEITC, or the transboundary issue, you're likely familiar with the Taku, Stikine, and Nunik, and know them as world-class transboundary salmon rivers. These three rivers originate in Northwest British Columbia and flow into Southeast Alaska, and they've been centers of culture, commerce, and biodiversity for thousands of years. In Southeast Alaska, these three rivers are responsible for 1 billion regional commercial fishing and visitor industry each year. And they're home to several indigenous nations, including the Tlingit and the Tahltan. They link about 80,000 people in many communities on both sides of the US-BC border. They serve as economic powerhouses and contribute $48 million annually to Southeast Alaska's economy. They've been stewarded by Indigenous peoples since time immemorial, and they are also subject to the U.S.-Canada Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909. And at the headwaters of these three rivers, BC has more than 12 large-scale open-pit mining projects at various stages of operation, exploration, development, and abandonment. This is a photo of the Red Chris mine, in particular the tailings dam or mine waste dam that sits at the headwaters of the transboundary Stikine River. And I'll show you a size reference for this later today, but this just gives you a sense of what we're talking about. So again, British Columbia has over a dozen of mines similar to this one at various stages in the headwaters of our shared rivers. Historically, 80% of Southeast Alaska's king salmon has come from these three rivers. However, in 2017, the Yunik River kings were listed by Alaska Department of Fish and Game as stocks of concern. And most recently, the Board of Fish has recommended that the Taku and Stikine River kings be listed as stocks of concern as well. So the problems are this: salmon populations are declining. And meanwhile, British Columbia is industrializing the headwaters of some of North America's last remaining wild salmon watersheds. Most Southeast Alaskans are at least familiar with the Taku River watershed and the ongoing pollution from the abandoned Tulsqua Chief Mine, which is shown here in this photo. This is a photo of acid mine drainage. And the Tulsqua Chief Mine is a small, minuscule baby mine compared to the Red Chris mine and some of these other mines that we're talking about. This mine was abandoned in 1957. And while British Columbia is taking steps towards reclamation and cleanup at this site, it's actively polluting the Taku right now, which is about 55 miles away from where I am today as the salmon swims. So around 7 or 8 years ago, as many Southeast Alaskans became aware of the magnitude of these projects in Northwest British Columbia, the catastrophe at BC's Mount Polly mine occurred in 2014. And that subsequently energized many voices in the region to highlight the risks associated with these large-scale earth and tailings dams, especially in regions like Southeast Alaska and Northwest British Columbia that are subject to high rainfall, floods, steep landscapes, earthquakes, and glacial shifting. So following BC's tailing disaster at Imperial Metals Mount Polly mine, as well as two fatal catastrophic failures in Brazil, there has been a large global spotlight on tailing dam technology. And this figure that you're looking at here just shows a little bit about the tailings mine waste sites all around the world. And the statistic that really sticks out to me is that there are 364 known tailings failures since 1915, including 71 since 2010. And in the wake of the Mount Polly tailings dam disaster, British Columbia had a general audit of their mine regulation and the failure at Mount Polly. And one of the findings was that if BC didn't change anything, they could expect two more tailings dam failures every 10 years. So it's been over 7 years since Mount Polly, and BC has yet to make substantial changes as were recommended in that following report. So again, two tailings dam failures were predicted every 10 years in British Columbia alone. Most recently, an audit by British Columbia's Mine Audits and Effectiveness Unit, which is an independent team in the provincial government's Ministry of Energy, Mines, and Low Carbon Innovation, has found mining code changes brought in after the Mount Polly disaster to be ambiguous, open to multiple interpretations, and lacking the definition needed to ensure compliance, verification, and enforcement. So in summary, BC often claims that their policy is world class, but if it's not being implemented on the ground, as was found by this recent audit that BC isn't any safer than it was 7 years ago when Mount Polly failed. This visual right here is just to give you all another sense of the size and scale that we're talking about when it comes to mines here. So you'll see on the left, you have the height of the Imperial Metals Mount Polly tailings dam. Then you have Imperial Metals Red Chris Mine tailings dam. So again, that's the mine that is actively operating in the headwaters of the Stikine. And that mine was permitted for operations shortly after the failure at Mount Polly. Then you have another, the Shaft Creek Mine, which is a proposed mine again in the Stikine. You have the Nova Gold Resources, also owned by Teck, also in the Stikine, which is at Galore Creek, as an even taller tailings dam. And then finally, you have the height of the tailings dam that's proposed at the KSM mine by Seabridge Gold, and that's at the headwaters of the Unic River. So despite a lot of growing public concern, both just in the public and also among the scientific community, British Columbia continues to plan and permit large-scale earthen tailings dams upstream of communities and also on shared transboundary rivers. Most tailings dams are high-risk structures. There was research published in 2015 that demonstrated an emerging and pronounced trend toward a higher incidence of serious and very serious tailings dam failures. So again, these projects are getting larger and larger, and many of these actually rival the size of the proposed Pebble Mine in Bristol Bay. So just to bring you up to speed with where we are now, that was like a quick overview of kind of everything that's happened in the last 7 years as Salmon Beyond Borders and partners have been working on this issue. And despite concerns from communities and lawmakers downstream, British Columbia is feverishly rushing through massive open pit gold and copper mines, many of which include those large toxic waste storage facilities. And this is still happening without the meaningful input of communities and tribes downstream in Alaska. So for 7 years, we've been organizing, we've gained the support of many lawmakers, many local municipalities in Southeast Alaska have already passed resolutions on this issue. And yet we still haven't gotten much change at all from British Columbia. So almost 20% of all three of these watersheds are now staked with BC mineral claims. And BC is currently marketing these mines as the Golden Triangle and as a very important key part of the clean energy transition, when in reality, the vast majority of these are targeting predominantly gold. And about 80% of the gold that they dig up will become jewelry. This is a map of the Stikine, and you have a copy of this, I believe, in some of the materials that were sent to you. It's a part of our fact sheet. And it can be a little overwhelming to look at first, but to orient you, you have the Taku to the north, then you have the Stikine, which of course, Petersburg and Wrangell sit right near the mouth of the Stikine. And what you're looking at here, the black grids are predominantly mining claims. And then the colored grids are claims that have been purchased by various companies. So the yellow cross right there in the middle of that square is the Red Chris mine. And you can see all around the Red Chris mine are some of those projects that we looked at the size and scope of the proposed tailings dams. An important piece of this is when you look down at the Iskut River on the bottom, the Iskut is the largest tributary to the Stikine, and virtually the entire riparian corridor of the Iskut River is staked with mining claims. So again, not only do we not have any say sitting on the Alaska side of the border, but British Columbia is also pushing these projects through without considering impact from an entire watershed scale. So they're not looking at how many projects are being developed in one watershed system. Let's see. And this is another map that's in the handout, just to give you a sense that we are not alone here in Alaska. Our neighbors in Washington, Idaho, and Montana, our neighbors to the south that also share a border with British Columbia, are having similar issues. with mines upstream on the BC side of the border, polluting transboundary waters that flow to the other side of the border. So this is really just to say that movements are building in these states, and many of them are also pushing towards a suspension of mining operations until free, prior, and informed consent, as well as binding enforceable protections, are in place for communities who depend on clean water. So here we are today. This summer, we've been working with partners throughout the region to launch the Rivers That Feed Us campaign. And if we're able to garner support for the timeout, we're working with tribes, communities, businesses throughout the region who depend upon clean water, in hopes that they'll bring their voices to the Biden administration to defend and sustain the rivers that feed us. So the resolution that you have, that we sent to you, is different than resolutions that have passed before. This one particularly is a request directed at President Biden and the US government to request of Canada a temporary pause on BC mine exploration, expansions, and permitting in transboundary watersheds until these watersheds protections that are consistent with the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and the US-Canada Boundary Waters Treaty are implemented. So this is very similar in one sense to previous resolutions that have been passed that ask for binding international protections. However, this one specifies that there's a temporary pause until those watershed protections are in place. And that piece was specifically added because of much of what we've talked about already today, and in particular, that map I showed you of the Stikine watershed and the size and scale of the mines that are under development there. This also calls on the Biden administration to call on Canada for a permanent ban on mine waste dams or tailings dams. So again, that's the perpetual storage of toxic mine waste underwater and behind earthen dams along our shared rivers. This here is the language that you could see in the resolution. So I just wanted to include this as well. This is the final clause and summary of the resolution language. And we hope that your city council will consider adopting the resolution and joining the communities of Tanaki, Pelican, the organized village of Cake, in terms of tribal support, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, Craig Indian Council, Craig Tribal Association, and the Organized Village of Cake have all also passed this resolution. I think that's all I have for you now, and I'd love to pause for questions because I just shared a lot of information.
Thank you, Brianna. That was a great presentation, and paired really nicely with the information that you had sent over earlier. Are there any council members that have questions or comments for Brianna's presentation? Go ahead, Mike.
Yes, this is just a question about the mechanics of this. Would it be acceptable? I think most of us on the council would support the principles of this and the intent and all of that. It's not actually our resolution, though. It's yours. And I wonder if it's satisfactory if we pass a motion authorizing the mayor to be a signatory, to be shown as a signatory on your resolution without us making it into an actual City of Gustavus resolution. The council would be approving support for it and the mayor's signature on it. Thanks.
Sorry for the delay. It's hard to manage my mute button while also having my screen share. That's a great question. I I think ultimately it's about what works best for all of you and your council. And I think the decision is ultimately yours. I will say the city of Tanaki and the city of Pelican both took the drafted resolution language that we had sent and made it into an official resolution for their cities. The Sitka Assembly is set to address it tomorrow, and they have done the same thing there. So they've taken the resolution. One of the assembly members has turned it into a full resolution for the Sitka Assembly, and they'll be voting on it as a resolution. And my understanding is that that's what all of the tribes that have passed it thus far have done as well. So again, at the end of the day, I can't make the decision for you all as to what works best. We are sending this a version or this exact resolution actually around to some community members and business owners who are in other organizations who are signing on to it. And we have just about 30 that have signed on thus far. And we have a similar shorter version of this that is open to the public to sign on for individuals. And we have over 150 individuals, predominantly all Alaskans, have signed on to that. So we're mostly coming to municipalities in hopes that you will pass resolutions. Over the last 7 years, there's been a lot of organizing done all around the region. Not just by us, but with partners, especially Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. And we have, you know, garnered support from the Alaska Congressional Delegation. For example, Senators Murkowski and Sullivan and Congressman Young have been supportive of this issue and have been particularly supportive of highlighting the need for financial assurance and binding protections previously. And part of what we've heard from the congressional delegation, as well as the US State Department, is actually that it's very important for them to continue to hear from Southeast Alaskans, what they think and feel about this issue and if this issue is important to them. So that is largely why we've been coming to municipalities directly. Previously, resolutions had been passed and we were able to take those in to offices, send them in as packets. And it's been really helpful in showing that there's broad support for this issue. But outside of that, I of course, ultimately, it's up to you all as to what feels best for your council.
Thank you very much for that.
Go ahead, Tom. Sorry, I thought I was unmuted. Tom, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. On Brianna, on the last whereas, the statement before the therefore, it says we, the undersigned businesses, owners, organizations. This is a resolution coming from the council. Perhaps it would read better if it said representing businesses, owners, and organizations, because we're the government body, not necessarily members of the community. Is there a reason that this language is used specifically, or going back to Councilmember Taylor's point, if modifying this statement read more specific to the council, would that have any impact to the resolution? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question. That is a really great point. And I think what has happened with most councils, well, Tanaki and Pelican, I believe that they removed that particular language. So we sent the draft that we've, well, it's no longer a draft, but at the time when we first sent this, it was a draft that we have been sharing, right? So this language, we, the undersigned, is for specifically our community resolution that is being signed predominantly by organizations and business owners. And so of course, if your city council were to choose to adopt this resolution and bring it forward as an official City of Gustavus Council resolution, I assume that you would want to remove that, and that would be perfectly fine and would make sense. Did that clarify your question, or did that answer your question?
No, that's perfect, Brianna. Thank you.
Great. Thanks so much for asking it.
Thanks, Tom. I think that was a helpful clarification. Are there any other council members that have questions or comments about this? Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, I just want to say I strongly support it. I think this is great, and I really commend the organization for working on this. It's such an important issue. And thank you, Brianna, for this presentation.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And thank you all for inviting me to be here. And again, I apologize on behalf of my colleagues, Fred and Tiss at Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission. They had prior commitments tonight that they couldn't get out of, but they are very much a part of this resolution. It was jointly written and we're working on it together. So I'll pass on your comments to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya, and thank you, Brianna. This is Brittany. I also am strongly in favor of supporting this and feel that we should bring it forward to our general meeting next week. And I can workshop this a little bit, maybe work with the city administrator and Councilmember Taylor if he wants to work on it too. Just to get the therefore be it resolved language the way we'd like it. But I would like to bring this forward under the consent agenda for next week. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I'm okay with us making it into a regular city resolution after that description. And I can see if it's going to go into a packet, it carries a little bit more weight if we've actually done a resolution and it shows up on our letterhead and all of that. So, and I'm satisfied that the statements are most likely all correct in it or justified. So, yeah, I'm happy to work with you on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
This would go under new business because we will need to read it as a resolution. And I can go ahead and put it there now. And if you guys want to discuss it more as we go through the draft agenda, we can go back to it under new business.
Excellent. That sounds good. Thank you. If there are no objections to that, we'll move ahead with that plan. Okay, I'm not seeing any other objections or comments from the council. So thank you again, Brianna, for taking the time to present to us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. And yes, I'm available for questions via email as well. And I believe your clerk has my contact info. So feel free to reach out in the next week if you need any more information. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a great night. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and share my screen again. Oh, no, I'm not. Okay. Am I the co-host? I don't see it on there. There you go. Okay. Can you see my screen? Okay, thanks. All righty. Moving on. Hopefully everybody looked over the minutes from the general meeting and the special meeting in August. Are there any council questions or comments about the meeting minutes? Okay, if you have any that you're not thinking of now, go ahead and contact Karen before Wednesday, please. And we'll go ahead and move on to the city administrator report. Go ahead, Tom.
Thank you, Mayor. So the COVID-19 testing programs have a couple of expiration dates upcoming. PCR testing program was supposed to expire the end of September. However, the state has extended it. It's funded through 2022, and the extension should run through 2025. The rapids testing is funded until March of 2022. However, we only have currently about $4,700 available at this point. Although we are expecting to receive reimbursement from FEMA out of our for our COVID emergency reimbursement, and those funds can be redirected into the testing program. It's important to note that CARES Act funds runs away at the end of the year, and we will be looking to fund the program beyond that if council so chooses to do so. So the proposal is to go ahead and extend the programs into next year and run them as long as the funding is available. If the council wants to direct staff to reallocate those CARES funds and apply those to the rapid testing, we will go forward and do that as well. So I'm looking for some direction from the council to move the CARES Act funds that we get as a reimbursement from FEMA and fund the rapid testing program up through the end of the year, and then use the FEMA money to help carry forward into 2022. Not hearing any. If there are any comments or other thoughts, please. I'm sorry, Tanya, I didn't see your hand.
Yeah, thanks. I think that sounds like a great plan. I think that we should try to keep the testing going as long as we possibly can afford it. I just think it's essential for what we're doing here in Gustavus, for the school to be open, for the library to be open. You know, the one recent case we had in town was a good example where I stopped by the fire hall I think last Wednesday, and there's, you know, just everybody was coming in to get tested, and we were able to really get a handle on the fact that it really hadn't spread, which was great, really quickly because of the rapid test in particular and the PCR in general. And so people traveling this winter, coming back, they can get tested. Yeah, anything we can do to keep that going as long as we need to, I support. Thank you.
Thank you, Tanya. John?
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I wanted to echo Tanya's comments there. I think it's a pretty critical tool that we have to nip any cases in the bud in terms of spread. I think I've also, I look at it as a way that you know, all of us that, you know, might travel or something like that when we come back. It's just a way of, you know, protecting our families and protecting our community members. Because, you know, we don't want to be the person to start a big spread. And that tool is really essential to address that.
Thanks, John. Vice Mayor VanderZanden.
Yes, just question, the that FEMA money, was that originally slated to cover some of the flood damage and ditching and things that had already taken place?
No, that we had two emergency declarations going on at the same time. The FEMA funding or funding potential for the roads is still ongoing. Council member Taylor and I are continuing to work with FEMA and getting our application filled out and working with the team to give us the best possible chance to recover a lot of those road funds. This particular emergency was for the COVID-19 pandemic. So it's a separate funding source, and that that application has been submitted. So we're anticipating a reimbursement check within the next couple of months. And like I said, CARES Act funding expires the end of December. So the money that we would put back into CARES Act will only be able to fund us through the end of the calendar year. If we want to run that PCR program beyond that, then we'll have to utilize whatever funds are remaining out of the PCR, which currently is about $4,700, or any additional funds the council wants to put into it. Did that answer your question, Joe?
Yes, thank you.
This is Brittany. I'm also in favor of continuing funding the testing as long as we can. And I really just wanted to give a big shout out and a huge thank you to Jen Williams and Ken McGowan for doing the testing. I think Jen told me that 105 people got tested after we found out that there was a positive case in town. So I also wanted to thank everybody that got tested. Really happy to see people taking advantage of that service. So yeah, let's keep it going. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. Joe Clark.
Thank you. I'm also in favor of continued testing. I think it's a good idea. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Okay, well, thank you. If you have any other comments or questions, please send them to me. We'll get you a response as soon as possible. The next item has to do with the Good River Bridge. Council member Taylor and I have been working on a request for proposal to put out to get some engineering input for the repairs at the Good River Bridge. We had intended to just put this RFP out, but I wanted to see if there was any interest by council members to have this presented at the general meeting. So is there any comments or questions or direction to bring this to the general meeting?
I would like to see it brought forward. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay, moving on. I did speak with the clinic about the vaccine incentive program, and they have agreed to accept the funds and move forward with developing eligible project for those funds. They haven't got the details of how they would use that yet, So once they do, I will pass that on to the council. Otherwise, we will be issuing them a check for the funds that we had received from the Huna Indian Association. Okay. There had been several complaints about the large truck speeding along Wilson Road. I contacted the CCON project supervisor, notified them about the complaints. CCON is hoping to be finished soon and demobilized by the end of September or early October. They have a small amount of paving to do on the ramps and then some striping and a few items on the punch list. They do not have any plans to return next summer. However, I brought this forward because Councilmember Buckeye had asked that the topic be brought to the work session for discussion. I don't know, John, if you wanted to have any additional comments or begin any dialogue, but that was the input I did receive from CCON. And since that contact with the project supervisor, I had not received any other complaints about the speeding truck. So hopefully that did the trick.
Yeah, Tom, thanks so much for addressing it with them. And my sense is that the issue's largely passed now, and probably largely thanks to you speaking up and conveying that to the project supervisor. It was a significant concern for a while, but knowing that the demob will be coming end of the month or beginning of next month. And also, I mean, my, you know, anecdotal observations of being down Dock Road recently is that the trucks all seem to be driving fairly responsibly. So I think, when I brought this up, it was probably the tail end of the concern, but your contact of the project supervisor probably helped quite a bit. Thank you.
Thanks, John. Any other comments or questions on that topic? Okay, great. The next item, we have two new staff members on board the city staff. Sol Martinez has taken over the interim fire chief position. He's tackling many of the projects down there. I think he's putting a lot of effort in there, and hopefully we'll have the volunteer fire department getting the type of training and leadership they need down there. So thanks, Sol. If you see him out there in front of Fire Hall or at City Hall, give him a shout. We also have a new treasurer. Eduardo Loggins is our Phoebe replacement. She's been on board a couple of weeks now. Phoebe's been doing an awesome job in helping her with the transition, showing her some of the nuances of the treasury of the council. So a big thanks to Phoebe, and a hearty welcome aboard to both Warda and for Sol. Continued issues at the beach. So we continue to have problems at the beach restrooms, the honey bucket usage, trash. We've had a recent dog attack. Unless there's objections from the council, staff is going to put together a proposal with costs and bring it to the council for an approach that will hopefully address these issues. We're looking at a camera on a pole that will provide 360 coverage. Also have the ability to film at night. It will serve two purposes. One, it will provide for some security and accountability down at the beach, and it would also provide a webcam for the floats, you know, some opportunity for folks to look out and see what the water looks like and activity at the beach. So is there any objection to staff bringing forward a proposal, or are there any comments or questions from the council? Okay, thank you. And finally, as I mentioned, Council Member Taylor and myself met with the FEMA team to go over the areas that we had done some repair and recovery caused by the December 2020 flood. Glacier Bay Construction has been working diligently to help restore our roads and make improvements that will help prevent future flooding. You probably have seen much of the ditch work that's been going on along Wilson and Reed Creek, both cleaning out of debris and vegetation and some new ditching. Currently, we are completing the damage inventory portion of the FEMA work. And once that's complete and submitted to FEMA, we'll be working on the mitigation. Mitigation is the prevention aspect of this effort. It'll be both a FEMA and a state funding opportunity. Many of the projects fall under coverage of what the state can do for us, although they are limited in funds, and what they can't, we hope the federal government through FEMA will be able to come through and provide for improvements such as increasing the size of some of the culverts that exist, putting new culverts in where they don't, and other flood prevention projects that not only staff, but hope to have also some input from some community members with expertise in this field. Are there any questions about the FEMA process or the site visit? I would like to give a shout out to Todd Boris for his assistance with both the recovery repair of the damages caused by the flood and some of his technical expertise in helping us understand better what projects might be more effective moving forward, both in the mitigation and for the work that we've done on the roads. So thanks to Mr. Boris for that assistance. Okay, not seeing any other comments or questions. Thank you, Mayor. That's all I have.
Thank you, Tom. And thank you to Mike as well for that FEMA work. I know that took up a good chunk of, I believe, a Friday for you guys. So thanks to both of you for working on that. Okay, moving on to our consent agenda items. First up, we've got an NCO. This is the introduction of the capital project funding for 2021. And this will have public hearing October 11th, 2021. Any council comments or questions? We have Eduarda and Phoebe here. If anybody has questions, it could be good for both of them. But if you don't have any questions, that's okay too. Go ahead, Mike.
I was just going to suggest maybe Eduarda could give us a summary of what's going on in this one. I think I understand it all, but wouldn't hurt to have a summary from the treasurer on it. Thanks.
Thanks, Mike. This is Phoebe, and since I created this one and it's a little elaborate, I can speak to it. We have a different NCO that's up for public hearing, the same meeting that is moving funds that have already been pulled out of AMLIP from the library capital project to the Wilson Road capital project. And so what this NCO is doing is moving funds that we had also moved for the Wilson Road capital project between our AMLIP accounts. It's moving it back since that Wilson Road project is now being funded and using funds we've already pulled out of AMLIP. And so it's just kind of cleaning up the AMLIP capital improvements current account by putting the 40 grand back into our long-term account for available use for other projects, and also returning another $4,300 of earnings and other small project return amounts. So it's just kind of tidying up that AMLIP capital improvement current account and just leaving the previously funded library shed, a portion of which is still in AMLIP, is all that will remain in that account. And then the other part of this NCO is withdrawing funds from the capital improvements long-term account to fund the design phase for the DRC main building replacement and the fish waste disposal station. Scoping has already been approved for the design phase for the DRC main building, and the fish waste disposal station scoping is on the agenda for the general meeting September 20th and is in the packet. And so those are those two items there. When the actual agenda comes out, this will be pulled, this NCO will be pulled off the consent agenda and will be below the consideration of the fish waste disposal station scoping document in the agenda order, so that the scoping is considered before the NCO is considered. But that's what's going on here. The first one's just kind of housekeeping, and the second one is funding, or the second part is funding.
Thank you, Phoebe. Are there any other council questions about this NCO? Okay, doesn't look like it. If you have any other questions, you can email City Hall for that one. The next item I've got under another tab. This was a late addition to the packet. This is a resolution that Karen sent out to the council. So hopefully everybody got a chance to read this. This is a resolution for appointing new election officials for the election. Karen, did you want to speak any more to this, or?
Sure. This is just procedural. In the fourth, whereas I've listed all the people that will be working the polls on election day on October 5th, and they are appointed through resolution. And so this is the resolution that I've drafted to do that.
Any council thoughts or comments or questions for this resolution? It's pretty straightforward. I actually have a question for Karen. How do people just volunteer to become folks that are working the election, or is it by you seek people out? Like if somebody in the public wanted to do this next year, would they just come and talk to you?
Yeah. Yeah, so we have kind of an ongoing list of people that have worked the polls on and off for several years. And so I usually just kind of go through that list. They are all volunteers. So there's a few people on this list this year that it's their first time volunteering. And they will probably be asked if they'd like to stay on the list for future years. So myself with the municipal elections and Bree Olson, who usually oversees the state elections, we kind of have a combined list of people that we share. So that's how it happens. If anybody would like to volunteer, we'd certainly love to have them and add them to the list, because some people are not always available. And they can contact me if they'd like to be added to the list.
Thank you. Okay. So that will be under the consent agenda. And the next item on our agenda is another NCO. This is the introduction of departmental budgets, and this will also be up for public hearing on October 11th.
Oops, pardon me, Madam Mayor. It looks like we have the older version. There was an updated version, and I can go ahead and share that on my screen.
Okay, thanks.
Just one moment. Okay, are you seeing that?
Yeah. Maybe if you could zoom out just a little bit, Karen. Oh, you zoomed in.
Okay.
Yeah, it's back to where it was. Okay, that's good. Thanks. So on this NCO, we've got the rental for the GCC for the candidate forum, and a note with the staffing changes, lower insurance rates, but some more expenses for training and deferred maintenance on the fire department vehicles. So if anybody has any questions for the treasurer, you can go ahead with those. Okay, doesn't look like it. I'll go ahead and share my screen again. I think I forgot to mention on our last NCO, so two items ago, this will, so next week, instead of having this item on our consent agenda, it's going to be under new business because it has the fish waste disposal stations on it. And we need to approve the scoping document, which is under new business, before we can approve this NCO. So this, the order of this will be a little bit different next week, but the same information, just FYI. Okay, moving on to items that are under ordinance for public hearing. This is an NCO for the Amlip Gravel Pit Fund, and this was introduced on August 9th, 2021. So any council questions or comments for this NCO? Okay, seeing nothing from the council. The next item is another NCO. This is for the departmental budgets, and this was also introduced on August 9th. Okay, seeing nothing from the council, moving on to the last item under ordinance for public hearing, another NCO, and this is for the capital project funding, which was also introduced August 9th. Any council questions or comments about this item? Okay, moving on. Oh, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I gather from this, we're all done with the library roof repair and it didn't cost anywhere near as much as we had budgeted. Is that what that means? I haven't been following it. So if so, that's.
That's my understanding after speaking with Tom, but Tom, would you like to speak to that anymore since that project's finished up?
I know you're absolutely correct, Councilmember Taylor. It came in under our budget, just slightly, but nonetheless, it was timely and nice job. If you've been out there, you could see some of the new roofing on there. From all I understand, they did a fantastic job. So a big thank you to Gustavus Construction.
Thanks.
Okay, awesome. I think that project, I'm not sure if we first started talking about it when I joined the council, but it feels like it's been in the works for a really long time, so I'm glad to see it wrapped up. And then the last item on the agenda is to approve the scoping document for the fish waste disposal station. And this is pretty straightforward too, but if anybody has any questions about this, I think Ben could speak to it. Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, thanks for putting this together, Ben. It looks great. I just have a question about the I don't know what you call it, garbage can, basically, the fish waste canister. Do you know how big the top door is? I guess I was just thinking about, some halibut carcasses are really big and, yeah, just wondering if it's big enough to, or if there's going to be a size limitation on halibut going into the bin.
Go ahead, Ben.
Okay,
Ben, go ahead if you're on there. Yeah, go for it.
Yep. Yes, Tanya. So I was kind of curious about the same thing. And because of the way that it's set up, the way that the bin that we all seem to agree that we like right now, because of the way that the trash cans will be inside it, that the cans inside it will only be able to hold something big enough that goes through the door. So if a halibut carcass was too big to go through the door, it would be too big to fit inside the bin inside it. So that is kind of the best answer I have. But if you have a super large halibut carcass, we might not be able to fit it inside. It might not fit inside. You may have to do some other kind of breaking down of the carcass to get it to fit inside. But if it'll fit inside the door, in order to fit inside the bin, it has to fit inside the door first. If you'd like me to say anything more than that, I'll try, but I think that's the best way I can explain it. And I don't have the specifics on me. I do have them at the office, though. I can text you what the exact size of the door is after I've seen my notes tomorrow.
Okay, thanks, Ben. So you think it'll fit like most normal halibut carcasses, though, the smaller ones?
Yeah, so imagine a 30-gallon trash can, how big around the top of that is. So a normal size, large trash can, that's what'll be inside it. So that's how big the opening will be for the fish carcasses to go through on the bin itself.
Great, thank you.
Any other council questions for Ben? Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Ben, was there an estimate from someone to build one of those locally? I assumed out of aluminum, but did that ever materialize?
There was talk of that, and there wasn't a firm estimate given. There basically, I was told that I would need to come up with $1,500 up front, that would pay to get the aluminum here, and that the cost would then be based on the final product. Just for anyone who hasn't been following this at all, the bin that we found at Bear Savers is only $1,315. So right there, the cost of the prefabricated bin was cheaper than the estimate of the aluminum for the custom bin. And that just alone made it seem like that was the direction to go. It also, you know, at our last couple of discussions, it seemed like some council members preferred the idea of a prefabricated, proven bear safe bin, which I don't disagree with. And so we kind of just left the custom bin, we let that idea go for cost and proven reliability issues. And I can try to speak more to that if you want, but I think that sums it up.
Thanks, Ben.
Go ahead, Mike.
I'm glad to see this going forward. Do we have just one of these? Or are we going to have several of them? The, a big trash can doesn't sound like it would hold very many carcasses. So I'm guessing maybe we're going to have more than one. Thanks.
No, Mike, so this is a dual can enclosure. So it'll hold quite a bit of fish carcasses, and then the next to that will be trash cans for people to put the trash that isn't fish carcasses in. And then either the DRC and staff or myself, a schedule will have to be worked out between us so that every day the bin is checked and emptied. And then the cans will be pulled out and replaced with fresh cans. So that is our way of trying to keep up with it. I believe that if we were having to move it multiple times a day because of that much fish carcass waste, we would have to rethink our processing plan. So I believe that the size that we chose is ideal for the amount of fish waste we can process at the moment and into the future, I would hope. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ben, for taking the lead on this and putting together the scoping document. I'm excited to get this project up and running next season. Any other comments on the fish waste disposal for Ben? Okay, doesn't look like it. I apologize to both of our librarians. I didn't realize, or maybe I missed it in my emails, you would like to give an update on your COVID policy. And I know that we have both Jesse and Leanne on the line. So whenever both of you or one of you would like to take over, please go ahead and give us an update. Thank you.
Hi, this is Jesse, and I can speak to our new COVID plan. Would you happen to have a copy to share on the screen?
I don't think I have the most updated, so maybe Karen can share it. Okay. Hold on just one second, Jesse.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna stop sharing. All right, it's coming up. Yeah, it's loading right now. There we go. Okay, thanks for being patient, everybody.
Thanks for finding that and putting it up there. So Leanne and I started working at the library in June and July, and we're operating under the COVID plan that was created before we were there. And it had several phases, which made sense at the time when COVID first started. It made sense for there to be so many phases, the library completely shut down and then gradually reopened. And so when we started, we wanted to simplify the plan a little bit to have fewer phases so that it was a little more clear for us to move in between the phases. And since we'd learned so much about COVID and how it spread and mitigation measures to prevent spread, we felt like fewer phases made sense at this time. And so we have three phases, with phase three being completely open to the public, full capacity, and following CDC guidelines as far as mitigation measures go. And then phase two, which is kind of limited capacity, no group activities, very little programming. And then phase one, which is closed to the public. And in for all the phases, we have curbside pickup available and appointments for phase two and phase three for anybody that is uncomfortable coming in during public open hours. And whenever there is a positive case announced in Gustavus, we close for 72 consecutive hours. And so we can move from phase three to phase one when a case is announced to give time for testing and contact tracing before we reopen. Those are the main points. I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Go ahead, Tanya.
Yeah, thanks. I think this looks great. I just had a, when I first read it, I was thinking it'd be nice to define a little bit more like when you'd go to phase two versus phase three, but I understand that there's just a lot of variables and that might be difficult. But I wonder if there's, yeah, just any way to be real clear and transparent. I guess maybe when you go to phase two, I assume we're at phase three right now. Yeah, so maybe just going, when you go to phase two, if you have to go to phase two, like kind of explaining why would help. But yeah, I think it looks great. Good job.
Yeah, thank you. Our thinking was that, you know, when there's a case announced, we move to phase one and wait and see if there are more cases. And, you know, if more cases pop up and, you know, it may be that we move to phase two at that point if we have a number of cases in the community, you know, after 72 hours after the most recent case was announced. And in one of the bullet points at the bottom, it does kind of explain that. It's hard to say, you know, like you said, there's so many factors that can go into the decision.
Go ahead, John.
Thanks. Thanks to you both, Leanne and Jesse, for simplifying it. I think the three phases makes a lot of sense. And I also appreciated how it's posted on the city website. When you go to the library tab, it shows what phase or what status the library is at. So that was well communicated. I was actually kind of curious about the if you know where the capacity of 15 people came from for the phase two. I don't think I have a opinion one way or the other about it, but I was kind of wondering how that came about.
We took that number from the previous plan.
Okay, thanks.
I didn't have any questions about this, but I just wanted to thank both of you, Jesse and Leanne, for putting this together. It's simple, it's easy to understand. And I just really appreciate both of your time and flexibility with kind of revamping things. And I'm sure it's not the last time we'll have to kind of rearrange stuff. So thank you very much for taking initiative and helping keep our community safe, but still having our wonderful library open.
Thank you.
I think that's it. Let me double check. Anything else from council or staff before we adjourn for the evening? Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just wanted to thank the entire council and staff for the beautiful card of condolence that was sent to me in regards to my son's passing. It meant a lot. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. Okay, everyone, I think that is all we've got for the evening. Thanks for hanging with us, and don't get too wet if you're leaving the house tonight. It sounds like it was really a deluge earlier. So have a good night, and we'll see you next week.